Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 70th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. Today, I have a beautiful conversation that I'm so honored to share with someone who I think is just pure magic. Maria Minnis is a writer, oracle, yogi, artist, and editor. And we're talking today about her work on her blog, Anti-Racism with the Tarot. In this, she's been writing a blog about each one of the major arcana cards and how it can be a tool for dismantling white supremacy and systemic racism. I find this blog to be absolutely vital to especially white folks who are working on dismantling our internalized white supremacy and doing it from a magical tarot-related standpoint. So I hope that probably many of you have already read Maria's blog, but if you are just finding out about her work, I hope that you will go to the show notes, check it out, read her blog. And I also included a link to her tip jar. So if you love this episode, go ahead and send her a donation for her work and to support her. Big shout out to Maria. You're amazing. I'm so happy to have collaborated with you in this way. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and maybe even a rating. I would so appreciate it. I always love to see what you have to say. And if you would like to support the production of this super DIY podcast, you can go to www.patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch, and a pledge of $5 a month, only $5, y'all, gets you discounts on tarot readings, the apothecary, first dibs on new offerings and classes, and a monthly e-zine on the new moon and a monthly live collective reading. So if you're looking to learn a little bit more about tarot, I definitely recommend checking out the Patreon, and you can find out other ways to work with me. If you took either Tarot Summer School last summer or Tarot School for Liberation, I have a second session happening for returning students. It's called the Advanced Class. It's been brought to my attention by a few of my students that they're hesitant to sign up for a class called Advanced because they don't name themselves as that. But really, it's, if I were to choose like better wording, it would be considered the second session. So anyone from that class is welcome to join, and definitely have room for a few more folks. The registration is closing a week from tomorrow, I believe, on March 12th, and that's so I can get the custom flower essence out to everybody before we get started. So I'll put a link in the show notes to my website. Definitely would love to see some returning students. Last class, the first advanced session, I think went really well, and it seems like everyone is like best friends now, which is so exciting. And we really like broke down a lot and went through a lot in our 6 weeks together. It definitely is an intensive deep dive. So definitely check it out. I've got, I think, at least one scholarship for a returning student left. That's just like a discounted rate to take the class. So check it out. And I hope you love this episode. I know I did. I get to talk with so many amazing people on this podcast. And there's actually a bonus episode now up on Patreon. Lizzie and I, on the last episode, we ended up talking for a little while longer after I stopped recording the initial interview. So I recorded some of our conversation. It's, again, a lot about artistic process, and I created a bonus episode. So that is also available for patrons of $5 or more. Check out the link in profile to join and listen to that bonus episode, and there's lots of other bonus episodes up there as well, too. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I hope you love this episode with Maria Minnis. Thank you. Hello, I'm here today with the amazing Maria Minnis. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. So for folks who aren't aware of your work, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I am a tarot reader. I have studied the tarot since around like 2002 or so. And I'm always interested in using the tarot as sort of an analog for different things that we experience in life. I mean, I guess that's what it is. But I started thinking about how I might integrate the tarot into my work around equity and racial justice. And so, long story short, I have a weekly blog series called Anti-Racism with the Tarot, where we go through each of the major arcana cards and discuss different facets of anti-Black racism and how to fight that through, you know, just different lenses as we move through the major arcana.
Your anti-racism blog related to the major arcana is so vital and necessary, and just, it's such a generous share that you give to so many people. I was wondering if you could tell us about, you know, what led you to create this blog and sort of like your journey with tarot and how tarot has helped you, you know, through your own journey.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I'll start around tarot and my personal journey. I have a very, I love the tarot. I try to integrate it into like so many different aspects of my daily life. And so, like most of my projects, this anti-racism with the tarot thing came as a dream. And I initially thought of it as, you know, this sort of zine that I would just write small little blurbs about each major arcana card and a couple of like journaling exercises for each one. And so I had that all written up and ready to go, like ready to print. And then the pandemic happened and there's all of this social unrest at the in the summer of 2020. And I was just pulled in so many different directions, and I just decided to table the project for a while because it didn't feel like the right time to get it out there. And then later I had another dream late that summer, early in the fall, and I realized I could get this out to more people if I just slapped it down as a blog series. And it ended up taking the form of it's a lot more in-depth than the zine initially was supposed to be. And I'm glad for the opportunity. You know, I know that my primary audience is white people, but I'm also working on dismantling anti-Black racism within myself. And I'm a Black woman in America. And, you know, I think that there's so much deconstruction that all of us can do just in general. So I just really hope that this blog can help people both move through their internal processes and their internalized racism, as well as inspire them to go outside of themselves and do work in our world.
Amazing. I love that. And I was just telling you before we started recording about the article White Supremacy Culture by Tema Okun, which I've been working through for a while, like I would say, you know, since last almost a year, probably. It's a short article, but it's a list of different ways that white supremacy culture shows up in organizing and nonprofit movements. And I was saying, you know, I love your blog, and I think everyone needs to read it and probably read it like 10 times. And like, I should preface and say, white folks especially, I think, need to read this blog and really integrate your lessons. And, you know, the one that I took a longer time to read was The Chariot. And then when I read The Chariot, I was like, oh, I'm like not reading The Chariot because this is like a big area of growth for me, as mm-hmm. it corresponds with the aspect in Tema Okun's article about sense of urgency and like moving with a sense of urgency without taking time to like build relationships and check in with everyone is like a form of white supremacy culture. So that kind of, you know, gave me that new perspective on the Chariot. What cards do you feel like are really, do you have certain cards that you wrote this, you know, wrote, have been writing this blog about that really stood out for you and that were really easy for you to apply fighting anti-blackness lens to it, and then others maybe that were a little bit more challenging?
For sure. Yeah. I would say that, and maybe this is an easy answer, but The Fool was the easiest one for me to write about because, you know, I just love the energy of that card and the fact that, you know, I don't really think of the Major Arcana as this super linear thing or just tarot in general. But if you were to think of the cards like 0 through, you know, 21 or whatever, I just love the idea of putting The Fool anywhere in that spectrum, if you will. And I love the idea of just jumping in because no matter what step you're going to, you know, embark upon, like the lessons of the High Priestess or, you know, the World card, there still needs to be this impetus within you to just jump and see what happens. And so I really enjoyed writing The Fool because that's just the kind of energy I like to move through life with. One of the more difficult ones to write about, I would definitely say that my last one, The Hanged One, was a little bit more difficult for me to write. And it's interesting because I don't have really any blocks around that card. But in thinking about how to integrate it into this this blog series, I thought about a million different directions that it could go in, right? Because flipping your perspective could mean a lot of things. It could translate into a lot of different ways that you can take action into in this world. But I decided to pare it down into a simple post about passing the mic, which felt right. And it's interesting, the process of writing these, you know, I wrote this zine like a year ago, and I still have like the basic ideas for each card and where I want each card's direction to go. But when I actually sit down to write this long form thing based off of this paragraph that I'd written for this zine that was supposed to come out like a year ago or whatever, I tend to go in a slightly different direction than what I initially thought of. And it always, once I'm done and press publish, it always feels like, okay, I feel like I wrote about what I wanted to write about. But when I'm writing it, I'm like, I don't know if this will make sense to anyone other than myself. It's, you know, here you go, take it or leave it. And that's how I felt when I was writing about The Hanged One earlier this week. But yeah, my process is a little all over the place, but there's definitely, I think there are so many directions to go with each card and so many lessons that we can embark upon, you know, internally and, you know, externally, I guess you could think of it that way, that you could go with each card. And I think one thing that I would love for people to come away from this blog with is the idea that, like, I'm not saying, like, The Hanged One is always about passing the mic. I'm just saying this is a dimension of this card that I'm inviting you to look deeper into and find out how you can integrate what this card means for you into your anti-racism work. I'm just providing one perspective, and by encouraging people to see and read about how, you know, these rabbit holes I get into for each card, I hope that I can encourage people to go into their own rabbit holes and, you know, interact with their relationship with the cards and you know, form that relationship or further that relationship with an anti-racism lens, because in every single card, Major Arcana, Minor Arcana, there's always something that you can take away and take into the world with you and to inspire your actions with.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. I think, you know, I've been teaching tarot for liberation, like tarot classes, since last summer. I started teaching it, I guess, late spring last summer. And I relate to what you're saying, because it is about providing a framework based on your own lived experience around the cards, but not like teaching it as if that's the one and only truth, but also using that share as an invitation for the person learning to create their own meaning. Mm-hmm. And I also want to say, I love your post about the Hanged One. I just read it this morning because it's your newest post. And I thought it was really amazing. And I think, you know, the Hanged One to me is a good card for thinking about conditioning, like mm-hmm. the conditioning that we receive living in like a, you know, white supremacist, capitalist, cis heteropatriarchy, amongst other things. Because I think like, there's so much about resistance in the Hanged One, and it's right before death. So it's like, you know, I could also think of it being like a defensive, you know, that defensiveness, that ego that comes up when like you mm-hmm. learn that you've done something wrong or you've like harmed someone, and that like, no, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't like, that's a, wasn't my intention. Like, no. But then like when you fully accept that you're, you know, and I'll speak for myself, when I fully accept that I'm responsible for like my mistakes and for like making amends and for doing better next time, then I can move into death, you know, from there. And that's like the ego death. So yeah, I loved what you shared. And I super recommend everyone to read it. And also, Marisa de la Peña, who has been on my podcast a couple times, I remember said she had used the Hanged One as a relationship to, I guess it was because like at the time of that interview we were in the Hanged One year, but the mm-hmm. Hanged One being this idea of like struggling with the hoop. And you mentioned something about like getting uncomfortable and like accepting being uncomfortable in this work, in your blog. And yeah, Marisa had said like that, you know, for white folks, anti-racist work is struggling with the hoop and it isn't going to be comfortable, and you're going to try to like find your place in it and you're going to make mistakes. So I really loved what you shared on that blog.
Oh, well, thank you. That means so much to me. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, this work is about getting uncomfortable and then getting even more uncomfortable, because a new world isn't going to feel like the world that we're used to. So you got to get comfortable getting uncomfortable. And I think, you know, the Hanged One is a good card for to meditate upon when you're feeling like, you know, I'm losing power, I'm losing privilege, my life is not as blank as it used to be, carefree or, you know, light as it used to be. And that's, you know, that's okay. Everyone has to sacrifice. You know, if you are enjoying white privilege in our world, the only way to get rid of that privilege is for it to, you know, come away from you. You have to lose that privilege. And that's, you know, I'm sure an uncomfortable process, but it's one that, you know, that people have to get used to. And you know, and it's not just a, you know, get uncomfortable once and then you, like the fool, just dive in. There will be constant, I don't want to say constant, but I think the more you delve into this work, I think the more opportunities there will be for you to get uncomfortable, and the more that you're willing to just, you know, let it roll and accept discomfort, then the more, you know, the more you can focus on your work and less on the discomfort you're feeling doing the work.
Yes, absolutely. And I feel like as a white person who I feel like I've been like studying and reading about and looking at anti-racism for most, you know, like most of my adult life. And yet it's like such a, it's like a mountain, and I'm still making mistakes, still being uncomfortable, like still on that journey. But I feel like I've gotten better at being like, okay, this is, you know, it's like, I've heard this metaphor coming up before about like unlearning conditioning of white supremacy is not unlike, you know, becoming like breaking an addiction. It's something that is constant work. It's not, yeah, mm-hmm. it's not just like I posted a black square or like I post, you know, I gave like some money one time. It's like constant work for white folks because the harms that our ancestors committed is so gigantic and huge and like still exists today. Like we're still like living in this system. And I mean, yeah, it's like all the time I'm always like, you know, it's hard even for me to like watch TV now, because I'm like, I just see yeah. like all these like structures that are violent playing out and like normalizing this hierarchy that exists in our society. And that's, you know, so it's like, I feel like if I, as a white person, or if anyone who's like working on any aspect of their privilege wants to work on it, we have to recognize every time we go back out into the world, we're going to get reconditioned a little, because like mm-hmm. the world is so fucked up and problematic, basically. So yeah, I wanted to ask you also about another one of my favorite blogs, and I love all your blogs, and I love that you begin them, you know, I love that you begin them too with this little disclaimer about this is your perspective that you're holding as a Black woman in America, and then you choose like a quote that feels really applicable. So I wanted to talk about The Lovers and this idea of redistributing wealth or reparations.
So when I think about The Lovers, I often think about choices, because that's what comes up in my readings so often. It's just like one of the first things that come to mind. And so when I sat down to write choosing to redistribute wealth with The Lovers, I thought of the word discrimination, which I've seen in some writings for The Lovers card. I wish I could cite it right now. But yeah, so like discrimination, the ability to like separate things in order to see the similarities and differences between them, you know, to tell them apart. And then when we can tell things apart, we can, you know, decide what should come together, what to like leave in the shadows, or like what to abandon or what to put on the back burner. And so when we go into our everyday daily lives, go into the grocery store, we have to, you know, we have to practice some level of discrimination in order to make, you know, decisions. You know, I'm going to go to this store before I go to this bank. And so we can think about applying this sort of thoughtful choice lens to even more of our everyday actions, which includes, you know, where we spend our money. And, you know, unfortunately, we're in this fucked up capitalist world, society, where, you know, money and wealth often gives you more perceived power, or at least like social mobility. And so while we are in this dumb capitalist structure, while we're working toward full liberation, what we can do in the meantime is figure out how we're going to redistribute wealth. How are, you know, we can't sit around and wait for the government to pass, you know, a reparations bill. Like, people need help now. People have been constantly, Black people have been suppressed and discriminated against and blocked from so many financial opportunities, you know, amongst so many others. And so waiting for, you know, a reparations bill to be passed is not the answer. What we can do right now is to spend our money, you know, more thoughtfully. I would rather spend, you know, a couple more dollars to go to, you know, the Black hair supply store down the street than to go to Walmart. And that's not, I haven't always been in the position to be that privileged to do that. to make that choice. But what I'm trying to encourage people to do is, where you can make a choice to support, you know, oppressed people and to try to help elevate these communities, make that choice and do it. And back to this topic of discomfort, this is also discomforting. You know, like I'm a creature of habit. I like to go to the same store, you know, same time each week, and I tend to get pretty much the same things. And so we have to get comfortable with inconvenience too, which is a type of discomfort. And yes, shifting our money in different ways than we're used to is uncomfortable. It's inconvenient, but it's an act of devotion. It's an act of love to, you know, like to really be thoughtful and mindful in all of our, you know, actions. Is like such a big witch goal, right? And so, like, if we think about the everyday things that we do as casting little mini spells, one of the things that, you know, you can think about doing is purchasing from Black-owned businesses, and to do it as, you know, an intentional action rather than thinking of it as like charity or, you know, something like that, because, you know, it's not charity. It's, you know, it's shifting the power balance.
Yes. Yeah, totally. I have so many thoughts about that. Last year I made this, I made a goal. I was like, I'm not buying anything from Amazon or any of Amazon's, branches, because now Amazon owns so many things, and it was really hard. But I still shop at Walmart because I live in a small town and I have to go to Walmart for some things. But even choosing to not shop at Amazon, it was a privilege. Like, I'm in a financial situation where I don't have to go to, like, I can spend a couple extra bucks to like go to a smaller retail. But it is a sacrifice, you know, and it's a sacrifice that we all need to make. And it's, you know, it kind of reminds me too, like going back to the Hanged One blog that you wrote about, you were writing in that about, you know, deciphering who your favorite social media activist is on Instagram and like going beyond that, because, which I kind of wanted to ask you about it too, is about like Instagram activism and Instagram anti-racism, which is, yeah, I just kind of wanted to see what you think about that. Like, what, how do you think like anti-racism work has been shifted by, you know, by social media?
Yeah. So social media is, you know, we used to say like online and offline when referring to social media, and now those lines have been blurred quite a bit. And so when I think about social media activism, I think of it along the same lines of quote unquote offline activism, in that, you know, the intention is there, and but it's a different flavor of anti-racism work, right? On one hand, we've got this wonderful opportunity to spread information in a faster and more efficient way than ever, which is wonderful and keeps certain topics on top of people's minds. Because, you know, social media is ingrained in our lives in such interesting and strange ways, seeing, you know, being reminded of the importance of this work and who it's affecting, keeping that top of mind is a great thing, right? Because you're not, you know, you're not just sitting at your altar thinking about this thing. You're scrolling through your phone on the bus and you're thinking about, you know, anti-racism or like who you might donate to or whatever. You know, that's wonderful. And on the other hand, you know, we get into these like echo chambers, and we sometimes fall into the trap of, you know, really looking up to people and taking what they say as truth, Which, you know, we all do, and, you know, we all think very highly of, you know, different people and, you know, take some people more seriously than others. But I really feel like just because this information is so easily and widely spread, and it's so easy to pick your favorite sources, it's still very important to be very critical of the information you receive. Like, and you know, you don't have to write a, you know, a book report. You can just pause. Does this make sense? Does this resonate with me? Do I need to look this up a little more? Do I really know what this person's talking about, or am I just putting it in my pocket and regurgitating it to the next person I see? And so I definitely think that there are pros and cons to this work, but to this work being on social media. But I think the pros outweigh the cons in that, you know, you can't hide from this topic as much anymore. You can't hide, you know, from the fact that, you know, America is a, you know, terribly racist and flawed and oppressive country. And you can say that about plenty of other countries as well, as anti-blackness is across the globe. And so, yeah, I mean, I think positive thoughts about social media activism. And, you know, sometimes I think, you know, in the information age, I think we always want like answers because we're so used to looking them up. You know, I can think about what I, you know, I don't know, what's the best way to cook, I don't know, a bowl of rice. You know, I can go online and I can, you know, look up 10 different ways to cook rice. That's, you know, that, you know, all of which are probably amazing. Who knows? Or, you know, if I have the time, the capacity, the mental space, and the energy, I can, you know, I can experiment with making rice on my own. Or I can try it and realize, no, I want to look it up instead. And so I really like the idea of consuming information from social media from different sources, you know, and I think doing a really good audit of, you know, every now and then just to see who you're following and, you know, what information is coming into your head, whether consciously or subconsciously. Just doing a quick audit. And then also making the commitment to be discerning, of the information that we receive, because it really is, at least for me, it can be information overload to log onto Instagram, especially if something in the news has like been a really big deal that day. It's just overwhelming. And so I think checking in with ourselves regularly on how we interact, not just interact with social media, but how our interactions with social media affect the things that we do off our screens, the lives that we lead, you know, the relationships that we have. All of this, you know, all of this I feel like should be considered, because I think it's just so easy to idolize somebody on Instagram and just be like, they've got the truth. Because honestly, we're all just figuring it out, you know, as we go. And, you know, experimentation is, you know, it is undervalued.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's something I've been thinking about a lot in the last few months is I feel like most people that are really active on social media and have a lot to share, we're super awkward in real life. And but we can
Yeah.
like connect more easily with people on like this platform that we can control, which can be problematic, you know, because that means that we can put, you know, social media has that capability of putting out an image that you want to, you know, that you want to like create that image, you want to uphold that image, and it might not actually be a real reflection. And I think about that all the time. I really strive to be authentic and real and also, you know, vulnerable if I make a mistake and do that because I think it's like the antidote to this like performative, and I don't even just mean about anti-racist work. I think just like, you know, I think about the sixes a lot, like the six of wands, like, yes, I'm having a great day. Here's my hot partner, and like we're on a walk, and you're like performing that everything is going great, or like six of pentacles being like, I give my money away, and like I do all this stuff to support anti-racism work in a way that like is like seeking approval or validation.
Yeah.
Which is a trauma response, but it's also very, you know, something that I've been unpacking. It's like a trauma response, but it's also like rooted again in like white supremacy, is like the need to be validated for every good thing we do. So I think I struggle with that a lot with social media, because, you know, for me, I do, especially since my business has grown a lot in the last year, I've been able to do a lot of mutual aid work, like do a lot of donating and care packages. And, I don't, you know, I've kind of been going back and forth, which I think I've seen some of this, you know, I think I saw some of this, like, in some of your blogs, like maybe about the chariot. And then we think about, you know, these concepts of like white exceptionalism and stuff, where it's like, how much do you want to tell people about what you're doing? And how much do you want to do it without telling anyone about it? Because one thing I found with social media, and I struggle with like being a pretty public person on social media, it's like an interesting space to navigate, where I'm like, do I want to tell people about all the money I donated and all the things I do? Because yes. Then I'll look mm-hmm. performative. But if I don't say that I'm doing any of that, then I've also had people be like, you don't actually do anything. So it's like people, you know, mm-hmm. I think one thing about being on social media is there's like this, you know, I think that showing up, having responsibility, sharing the mic, as you said, like in the hanged one, but also recognizing that like people show up to social media with their own baggage, their own judgments, and they're going to put that on the people who they follow. And there's like a, you know, I'm always looking for ways I can be more responsible and ethical with my platform. But I also recognize like no matter how much work I do on that, I have to like not try to be a people pleaser and make everyone happy, because some people are there, you know, some people are committed to like always seeing things as being wrong. And mm-hmm. that's totally fine. Like that's their process yeah. as well.
Yeah. I am so freaking happy that you just said all of that. I have so many thoughts. But the first one that comes to mind is, so I also write tarot poems. I perform a reading and I write a poem to communicate the messages of that reading. And, you know, a percentage of everything that I make, it's all donation space, but I take a percentage of everything and I donate it to somebody who it needs emergency support. And the first time I did it, once I started doing tarot readings again, you know, I posted on Instagram that we donated so much, you know, XX amount of dollars to, you know, somebody, and, you know, blurred out the name and all of that. But then I was like, oh my gosh, I feel smarmy. I feel, you know, kind of gross doing this. I want people to know that, like, yes, I am, you know, doing what I say I'm doing. But at the same time, I feel very much like I don't need to prove myself to anyone. But at the same time, I feel this pressure to prove myself. You know, outside of social media, I am a very take it or leave it kind of person. I am very, you know, I'm very thoughtful and considerate. But when it comes to owning who I am, I step into that with pride and stuff. And then I go on social media and I become like, oh my gosh, am I doing the right thing? Am I saying the right things? Am I responding to everyone? Am I, you know, and part of the reason why I put the zine off for so long was because I didn't feel like I was a good enough spokesperson for the thing that I was writing about. And I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to deal with internet trolls. I didn't want people to look to me like I was someone who had the answers. I don't have the answers. You know, I spend hours every week just researching, you know, different things that I want to write about, you know, including this blog. And even then, I still feel like I don't know enough to satisfy the people who are following my work. I think, you know, if this blog post isn't good enough or interesting enough, then, you know, no one's ever going to read the other things or whatever. And it's so interesting how social media has introduced this new level at least for me, this new level of, I don't know, this new category of things to worry about when, like, we're not going to please everyone. And, I'm grateful for the platform. But like you said, a lot of the people who are really active on social media, I am relatively active. A lot of us are really awkward in real life and real life or life outside of Instagram. But yeah, it's a strange place to be, and it's a really great megaphone, but also a really big space for misunderstandings.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Because there's this, like, again, and like I want to like be transparent, like this thing I brought up earlier that I wrote was reminded of by your Chariot blog, from Tama Okun's White Supremacy Culture, Sense of Urgency, which for me as a Capricorn, recovering workaholic, recovering people pleaser, all of this stuff, like, is a hard one for me. Like, that's the one that I realized in the last year is like the big thing that I want to work on is like my sense of urgency. And I think that relates to social media because it's so easy to just make a, sometimes I'm like, and I hear you about like making a zine, and like making a zine can be, it's more, when you put it on paper, there's no changing it. Whereas if you make an Instagram post, you can edit it, you can archive it, you can take it down. And there is this like instant gratification about sharing something on social media, but that also just takes away that vital process of creating something. Like me, as someone that went to graduate school and wrote a thesis that was based on 2 years of my research. Like I spent, 2 years like researching this topic, like interviewing people, reading like everything I could find, and then I created like this 120-page paper about it. It was an interesting juxtaposition because when I finished my thesis was around the time that I started focusing on Rise Up Good Witch. And I like made these posts that like really blew up at that time. And it was just this weird juxtaposition in like, oh, I've been like working on this thing for 2 years. And then when it's done, like who's really gonna even read it? Like I don't even know who's gonna read this. But then it's like I make a post that's just like me ranting. It's essentially just like me ranting, and I'm not really like thinking that thousands and thousands of people are gonna read this. And then it just goes viral. So I think that's like the pull of Instagram or social media in general is like you can like write something and it can go viral and it can change your life, but there's so much responsibility in that. There's so much responsibility, and it is rooted, I think, in this sense of urgency, which is rooted in white supremacy.
Yes. I totally 110% agree with that.
So I wanted to talk the other blog, and I, like I said at the beginning before we started recording, like I feel like I could talk to you forever about your blog, and I'm like so curious just about who you are in the world and all of that. But I wanted to talk about the High Priestess because it's kind of talking about like love and light, which is, I don't like talking about the meme that I made that I a long time ago that went viral because I just don't like that I'm associated with it. But I think that you know what I'm talking about. I don't say it, but it makes me think about that love and light as a form of bypassing, which is like, I think. It is, I think the people that do it, although I do think things have changed, and by now, if people are still loving, white people, I should specify, are still love and lighting everything. Like at this point, I'm like, you should know better at this point. But I think, it comes from a place, I know, a place that feels that it's good, that feels that it's well-intentioned, and that is a big part of the issue I feel like with white quote unquote healers, for us to try to unlearn our white supremacist conditioning is that, as mentioned in your blog, we don't see it because it's a privilege. So we don't literally, we have to do work to see it. And while it can seem kind and like nurturing to tell someone that like they have the power to make their life better, and that it's like all in your hands, and like love and light only and positive vibes only. That I think that that perspective feels compassionate to those people that do it. And yet it is so, so violent and bypassy. So I would like, yeah, for you to just share some of your thoughts about, you know, working with the High Priestess from an anti-racist construct.
For sure. Yeah. I first just wanted to say, like, to acknowledge what you just acknowledged, which is the fact that a lot of these love and lighters are well-intentioned. But I will also say that I think that love and light can really look like, I don't know, rage and darkness when you're fighting for love and light in this world. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about the High Priestess, you know, I think about, you know, the veil in the Rider-Waite depiction, the veil that she's like in front of, or they rather. And, you know, on one side, we can see what's going on, and on the other side, we can't see what's going on. And so, you know, there's love and light that we can, you know, see or encourage people to see, but, you know, it often, you know, conceals the darkness and the ugliness of what's pushing us to say, let's just, you know, let's love and light it away, you know? And so it's a veil. And so part, you know, I write in the blog, you know, part of the, you know, duty of a witch is to, or I don't know about the word duty now, but, you know, mm-hmm. one of the things that we do is try to affect change in the real world. Our lives are, you know, most of our lives are beyond the altar. And so when we're thinking, you can be loving it at your altar all you want. But when you go out into the real world to affect real change, you have to deal with the realities of the real world. And I know it's all real, but I think when I say the real world, I mean, you know, off screen or like, you know, out into the world. And so in that reality of that world, our world, is that it's not all love and light. And so if we want to affect change in the world, we have to address, you know, the range of experiences on this planet. And that means that we can't just ignore the things we don't want to see. And the High Priestess is, you know, I'm actually sitting in front of of her card. I brought her to our discussion today. The High Priestess tells us, you know, to, you know, go beyond the veil and, you know, look at our shadows, which is a type of, you know, a way to overcome our fears. And it's also going back to something that is uncomfortable, you know, looking at things that aren't love and light can be difficult. But that's what we need to do in order to understand, you know, we need to go into the dark in order to, you know, and I hate the idea of dark being like bad and shadowy. Mm-hmm. I'll say shadows. Let's say that we have to go into the shadow in order to understand and process what needs to come out into the light. So until you confront, you know, the shadow within yourself and within this world, our internalized, our structural racism, and the things that we do individually and collectively to reinforce, you know, racist structures, confronting that is an act of love. It's an act of commitment. It's, you know, that is light. Even though the work does not look very love and lighty. And so when we think about the High Priestess, you know, they invite us to go within and to understand our inner voice, which is not always the best barometer for, you know, the decisions that we need to make in the world, because, you know, specifically, you know, most of us have been raised, you know, in, you know, a racist and capitalist society, and, you know, everything is sort of like, you know, the oppression here is just de facto, like we just take it as it is. And so when we think about our inner voices, We often don't think, and I think this is a little, this taps into some of my little issues with social media, in that, like, I think there's this big message going around to always trust your inner voice, but our inner voice is partially shaped by the world that we live in. And so all of that's to say is you can't just trust your feelings automatically. White people have used feelings to justify all sorts of things to, up to murder. And so when we think about our inner selves, when the high priestess says, look within, look into the shadows, look into the dark, we have to confront the difficult truth that, we are sometimes are on autopilot, and we don't notice that if we're only looking at the love and light. We've got to look at the machine behind the person, what's behind the veil. What of our actions, which ones are intentional, which ones are habitual? Where a lot of times we autopilot our lives in ways that, shape the friends that we have, the habits that we do, the perspectives we share, the level of permission we have, that we perceive that we have to participate in this world. Look at the things that are inspiring us. Ask ourselves why, do I feel this way? And I hesitate to say all of this because I know so many of us have so much going on, right? We can't be mindful at every single moment of every single feeling that we have. But the High Priestess invites you to be as intentional as you can be to about how you use your inner knowledge in the world. And so in the blog post that I wrote about this card, I invited people to think about their everyday choices and to practice this sort of mindset that your feelings aren't facts, but they're just, compasses to help guide our choices. So, when you look within and think about, go into the things that you do every day that you might not always be thinking about, what's beyond behind the veil, you have this opportunity to, you have this opportunity to really think about, the stories you tell yourselves, where you get your information from, where your sources got their sources, or like where you're spending your money, or the friends that you have, the excuses you make, etc. So the High Priestess is all about just like, and I'm going on and on, but it's okay to go into dark places, quote unquote, dark places, shadowy places. We do that to learn and absorb and integrate, and all of this, not just the things that I specifically mentioned, but this anti-racism work in general. So there are many benefits to like the anti-racist work that we do. And one of them for ourselves individually is, the ability to continually remind ourselves and think about how we can decentralize the racism in our inner voice. And, working on and focusing on the things that we don't always notice, the things that aren't always in the love and light arena, or are typically in that arena, focusing and working on your own shadows is, of course, a step toward offering real love and light to the world that we share.
Wow, thank you. That was so much. Thank you for sharing that. I love it. By the way, I love when people go off, and I love tangents. Like, I'm a big fan. So yeah, this has been amazing, and we're coming on to an hour. So I was going to ask you about your tarot poems that you do for donation. So I'd love for you to just share a little bit, about I mean, I would love to know like where you came up with this. Like, why did you decide that you wanted to create tarot readings and make them into poems?
Yeah, so in 2019, in December, I was feeling pretty bummed about the state of things in the world and also feeling pretty restricted in how I could help, bring some joy into people's lives or, you know, whatever. And so I was like, okay, I don't really have any money. I don't have, you know, I don't have a ton of connections or like resources to like really, really give in the way that I want to give right now. But I do have words and I do have some paper and I do have some stamps. And so I invited people on Instagram to, you know, just DM me and I would do a reading for them and mail them a poem, a personalized poem that was based off of their reading. And when I did that, I realized that the delivery of my readings flowed so much more smoothly than in my traditional readings, which I love to do. I'm, you know, taking a pause on that right now. But sometimes I feel things during readings that I can't really articulate in very straightforward ways. And so when I was writing those poems for people, I realized, oh, this is another way that I can deliver information. And because this is a distance experience, writing this poem also involves the reader in this reading in that they have to interpret this poem as well. So it, you know, I offer, you know, the words, the things that came through from the reading, I write a poem, and then there's this other layer of translation, if you will, when you read your poem, because you're interpreting that based off of who you are and the things that have shaped you and your own internal processes. And so once I got some feedback about those, I realized this is something that I think I would like to do. So, you know, about, you know, a year later or so, I decided to start doing, you know, tarot poems more regularly, and it's all donation based. Every, you know, no donation is too, you know, too small or too big. It's, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. And I write a poem, I perform a reading, and then I write a poem. I mail it to you with like a little piece of art and a little note or whatever. And then I remain open for, you know, discussion or any questions for people who have requested those. And so I feel like it's one of my favorite things that I get to do. And I feel really lucky to be able to be let into people's lives in this way.
Amazing. I definitely want to get a tarot poem from you. And Maria, I was thinking, like, I really want to ask you about what your life card is and what you feel about a Hierophant year.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about this year. I know the Hierophant is like not the sexiest card in the deck, but I like it a lot. My life card is the High Priestess. And it's funny because I don't know, that's like a sexy card that everyone likes, but mm-hmm. I don't feel super connected to it in the way that like, or how about this? I am starting to understand the ways in which I'd like this card to play out in my life. And it helps me think about the things that I have trouble with. I have a lot of trouble, much like plenty of other people, I'm sure, looking at my own shadows and looking at the world's shadows. And I think it's a wonderful invitation for me to do what I can to bring, you know, the things that go, that happen beyond the veil into the light, that need to be into, you know, that need to be seen, that need to be witnessed. So I love that sort of that relationship with the Hierophant, in that for me, because I think there are a million ways to interpret the relationships between tarot cards. Actually, I think that there are as many interpretations of the tarot as there have been people alive. And so when I think about the High Priestess and the Hierophant together, for me, I'm taking this year to really think about knowing who I am, because I need to relearn who I am. Not that I've forgotten who I am, but the past decade has taken me on a pretty wild ride. There's a lot of trauma and a lot of junk I need to sift through, and I am taking this year as a total invitation to go into my own shadows and to learn myself, to relearn some things, to really identify where am I getting this information from? Like, why do I feel this way about myself? Where did that come from? And that's a lot of unpacking to do, but I am learning so much already. And I think on the greater scale, I think that there's a lot of learning that the world has in store for them this year and in store for us this year. And so I'm excited to see how things play out.
What's your card of the year?
My card of the year, it is my tower year.
Ooh, okay. I was wondering that
Yeah.
when you were talking. I was like, this sound like I was like, ooh, what kind of year are you on? Congratulations. I just got out of a tower year myself.
Nice.
It's yeah, it'll be good and bad at the same time, if you know what I mean. Well, how can folks, if folks want to support you, which I'm sure folks are gonna want to do that, and I'm gonna put a link in the show notes to your blog, and I'll also put, since I referenced the Tema Okun article, I'm gonna put a link to that in the show notes as
Nice.
well. But yeah, how can folks connect with you, support you? Do you accept donations, etc.?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Tiny Parsnip. It's all one word. There is a story behind it.
Oh my gosh, I wanted to ask you. I forgot. Can you tell the story behind Tiny Parsnip if you're comfortable?
I will do this as sensitively as I can. I had a lot of issues with being addicted to something and to a habit. And one day I was at this pie place in downtown Charlottesville, Virginia, and I was eating a pie with some tiny parsnips in it. And like a flash of light, I don't know where it came from, but I realized that there is another way to be. I don't have to be tied to this, addiction. It's going to be hard work, but like these parsnips in my mouth that I've never tasted before, I can have new experiences. I can live a life beyond what I can perceive right now. I can embark on to whatever I want, within the confines of our society. But I don't have to be tied to this thing, and I'm trying this new experience. I used to be a very picky eater, and I was just like, I can try this new experience. It wasn't the worst thing in the world. I tried it, I liked it, and I would like to have new experiences throughout my life. So yeah, that's the long and short of it.
I love that. That's amazing. Thank you for being willing to like share that off the cuff. But yes, go ahead. I'm sorry. I feel like I interrupted you. If you have more to
No.
share about how folks can connect with you and support you.
Yeah, totally. No, that I was happy to go off on that tangent. I've never told anyone that before, so it feels really nice getting that off of my chest. And yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Tiny Parsnip. The show notes will have my website, mariaminis.com. I do accept donations. I accept tips. In my You can go into my Instagram. There's a link in my bio where you can find the latest blog post for the Anti-Racism with the Tarot series. You can also find a link to my tip jar, which I graciously accept any and all tips. And yeah, you can follow along on my Instagram or on my blog. I also have a waning moon newsletter that you can sign up for at the bottom of any page on my website. And every waning moon, we just talk about a topic of letting go of something, and there's always a little exercise in there. And I also write poem scopes for each of the 12 signs. So it's a good time. It's just once a month, nothing too serious. And yeah, I think any of those avenues you want to, you know, follow me on or connect with me on, I am all for your presence and I welcome you.
Yay. Awesome. Well, it was seriously such a joy to speak with you and connect with you in this way, Maria. Thank you so much, not only for your amazing work, but also just agreeing to be on my show.
It's an honor. I love the show. I'm so glad that I can have any part of it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review in iTunes and check out www.riseupgoodwitch.com for more information about tarot readings and the apothecary.